So as already has been mentioned, this is the second talk in our series on Advent. So how are we all doing? You know, it's always a little bit tricky to gauge people's reactions on screen, but I really trust that you're all finding ways to navigate through all the different rules and regulations of what we can and can't do during this season we're in. You know, the term socially distanced, it's already been mentioned this morning, has become synonymous to the world that we live in. But I actually love Bishop Rachel's take on the term socially distanced. She says this: I refuse to use the term socially distanced right from the beginning. We are physically distanced, but socially connected. I really love that take on it. I think that's a much better take on the whole socially distanced thing. So let's make sure we are a people, not only this Christmas time, but all of the time, who are socially connected to those in our families, to our friendship circles, and those in our communities, whenever we can, wherever we can, and to whomever we can. So last week we celebrated the first Sunday of Advent, and we looked at what the point of it is. We reflected that Advent began in darkness, a time of silence where God revealed nothing new to his people. We reminded ourselves that God chose to come into the darkness, into this world of pain and of hate and of political confusion and of corruption and of COVID, as Emmanuel, Emmanuel, God with us. And you know, the Advent story is focused on people. I love the fact that the main characters of the Advent story, the first Advent story, are really not the kind of people you might expect the God who created the universe to use or move through. Especially when choosing to arrive, to bring such a monumental message of hope to a world that was in darkness and with no hope. He chose to move through the kind of people that are very human people. If you just look, I'm not going to read it because I might bore you, but just look at the genealogy of Jesus as recorded in Matthew's Gospel, chapter 1. On the surface, if you take the time to study it, you will see that it gives Jesus an impeccable Jewish background. He is descended from Abraham through David, both good, solid, Jewish to the core men. But actually, if you take the time to read that genealogy, a lot of people skip over it, but if you take the time to read it, you will also find within that genealogy the names of Tamar, who was the mother of Perez, Rahab, who was the mother of Boaz, and Bathsheba, who was the mother of Solomon. What is an interesting observation is that these three women are not particularly good Jewish mothers, such as Sarah and Rebecca and Rachel, who actually don't even get a mention in that genealogy. Actually, a shadow of guilt and controversy hang over all three of these ladies. Tamar posed as a pagan cult prostitute. Have a look at Genesis chapter 38 if you don't believe me. Rahab is referred to as a prostitute. Have a look at Joshua chapter 2 for that one. And Bathsheba committed adultery with King David. Take a look at 2 Samuel chapter 11 for that one. Matthew is making the point, and to quote J. John, that Jesus's human ancestry includes not just the great and good, but the not so great, the really not very good, and the downright dubious. This is the great principle. This is the great principle, folks, of God's grace. His love poured out on all who will receive it. Jesus coming into the world, not just for the good people, with a perfect past, but for those who are less than good and those who might have a dubious past. Then take a look at Mary. God sent the angel Gabriel to her to tell her this in Luke chapter 2, verse 30. Tracy.
You have found favour with God. You will conceive and give birth to a son, and you will name him Jesus. He will be very great and will be called the Son of the Most High. The Lord God will give him the throne of his ancestor David, and he will reign over Israel forever. His kingdom will never end.
So, well, the angel Gabriel comes and gives her that amazing message. The Bible tells us that Mary was engaged to be married, which in her culture meant that anywhere between the ages of 12 to 14, a marriage would be arranged, where she would then remain under the supervision of her parents, but be legally bound to the man that she was to marry, which is Joseph in this instance. So we can guess that Mary was just a young girl, just a young teenager when she encountered Gabriel. The fact that the Bible actually makes no reference to who her parents were, we can assume that she was nobody of any great significance. And you this morning might be thinking that you are nobody with no significance or purpose. And then what about the shepherds? Shepherding in those days was a difficult job that earned no rank or prestige in society. It was considered a good for nothing kind of job. But who did God choose to announce the coming of his son, Jesus, the Messiah, the hope of the whole world? Who did he choose to announce that to? Dirty, smelly, insignificant shepherds in fields near Bethlehem. So whether you feel guilt from your past, or whether, like Mary or the shepherds, you feel insignificant with no purpose or hope, Advent, the coming of Jesus, the coming of Jesus gives hope for us all. It gives hope for us all. So, okay, I understand the essence of the Christmas story, that Jesus was born into the world through Mary, who was basically a nobody, and that the angels announced his coming to the world through some good-for-nothing shepherds, and that he was born not in some top of its game hospital, but in a humble, dirty stable. But isn't that just a quaint little story that we remember, or maybe not, and we use it as an excuse to get together and drink too much and eat too much and spend too much every year? Although I guess that might be somewhat different this year. If his coming brings hope, how does that work? Because the reality is that over 2,000 years after Jesus came, we are living in days where there isn't a lot of hope. As I mentioned last week, there isn't a lot of hope around, especially in these dark times of COVID that we're living through. How does his coming affect me? How does his coming affect me? See, those of us who've been around church a while, or if you haven't, and if you choose to take time to read the New Testament, especially the Gospels, we have the advantage over those first century Jews who were alive at the time of his birth, in that we know how the story unfolded, how Jesus grew up and at the age of 30 started a ministry of healing and deliverance, of teaching. He was a peacemaker. He brought forgiveness. He was a miracle worker. He was a life changer. Until 3 years later, he was brutally killed on a cross. And then 3 days later, he rose from the dead. And the essence of the Advent story is this: by coming into this God-forsaken world, Jesus gives us the opportunity, if we choose to take it, of knowing him personally, receiving his forgiveness, knowing his peace, knowing his grace, receiving adoption into God's family, knowing joy and hope and love in our hearts. So let's just take a look at some of the promises that demonstrate and cement in our very beings all of what Jesus gives us. As we heard last week, listen to this from Genesis chapter 1.
God created human beings, me and you, in his own image. In the image of God, he created them.
Wow, people, you are God's idea. You are God's child. You are created in his image. You know, God could have made the image, God could have made the oceans in his own image, but he didn't. He could have made the birds in the air in his own image, but he didn't. He could have made the fish in the sea in his own image, but he didn't. He made you to be like him. You are God's idea, God's child. You aren't an accident. You aren't a random fluke of genetics or evolution. You aren't defined by how you look. You aren't defined by the number of followers you have on social media. You aren't defined by the car you drive or don't drive. You aren't defined by the clothes you wear. You aren't a nobody. God made you in his own image. There is something of him in you. He breathed life. He breathed life into your lungs. How cool is that? Being reminded of and believing that truth can only fuel hope in our hearts. And listen to this from Romans chapter 8 and verse 16.
For his spirit joins with our spirit to affirm that we are God's children. And since we are his children, we are his heirs. In fact, together with Christ, we are heirs of God's glory.
An heir, by nature of its meaning, gets it all. When we commit to Jesus, then we are adopted into the family of God. We become a co-heir with Christ of God's glory. I've told this story before, but actually I make no apologies for telling it again, as I think it is a story worth repeating and really sums up what I'm trying to say here. Years ago, there was a very wealthy man who, with his devoted young son, shared a passion for art collecting. Together, they traveled around the world, adding only the finest art treasures to their collection. The widowed elder man looked on with satisfaction as his only child became an experienced art collector. The son's trained eye and sharp business mind caused his father to beam with pride as they dealt with art collectors around the world. As winter approached one year, war engulfed the nation, and the young man left to serve his country. After only a few short weeks, his father received a telegram. His beloved son had died while rushing a fellow soldier to a medic. Distraught and lonely, the old man faced the upcoming Christmas holidays with anguish and sadness. The joy of the season, a season that he and his son had so looked forward to, would visit his house no longer. On Christmas morning, a knock on the door awakened the depressed old man. As he opened the door, he was greeted by a soldier with a large package in his hand. He introduced himself to the man by saying, "I was a friend of your son. I was the one he was rescuing when he died. May I come in for a few moments? I have something to show you." As the two began to talk, the soldier told of how the man's son had told everyone of his, not to mention his father's love, of fine art. "I'm an artist," said the soldier, "and I want to give you this." As the old man unwrapped the package, the paper gave way to reveal a portrait of the son. Though the world would never consider it the work of a genius, the painting featured the young man's face in striking detail. Overcome with emotion, the man thanked the soldier, promising to hang the picture over the fireplace. The following spring, the old man became ill and passed away. The art world was in in anticipation, unmindful of the story of the man's only son, but in his honour, those paintings would be sold at an auction. The day soon arrived, and art collectors from around the world gathered to bid on some of the world's most spectacular paintings. Dreams would be fulfilled this day. Greatness would be achieved, as many claim, I have the greatest art collection. The auction began with a painting that was not on any museum's list. It was the painting of the man's son. The auctioneer asked for an opening bid. The room was silent. Who will open the bidding with $100, he asked. Minutes passed. No one spoke. From the back of the room came, who cares about that painting? It's just a picture of his son. Let's forget it and go on to the good stuff. More voices echoed in agreement. No, we have to sell this one first, replied the auctioneer. Now who will take the son? Finally, a friend of the old man spoke. Will you take $10 for the painting? That's all I have. I knew the boy, so I'd like to have it. I have $10. Will anyone go higher? Called the auctioneer. After more silence, the auctioneer said, going once, going twice, gone. The gavel fell, cheers filled the room, and someone exclaimed, now we can get on with it and bid on these treasures. The auctioneer looked at the audience and announced that the auction was over. Stunned disbelief quietened the room. Someone spoke up and asked, what do you mean it's over? We didn't come here for a picture of some old guy's son. What about all of these paintings? There are millions of dollars of art here. I demand that you explain what's going on. The auctioneer replied, it's very simple. According to the will of the father, whoever takes the son gets it all. How does Advent, the coming of Jesus, affect me? It affects you and me, if we allow it, because if we commit our lives to Jesus and become his disciples, then we get it all. Whoever takes the Son gets it all. God bless you.